LATalkRadio.com, SheenaMentalExperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show. My guest all this hour is also a regular on the guest, regular guest on the show, and I adore her. Her one-woman show is called Stopping By, and it's wonderful. I saw it when it was at the Atwater Village Theater, and now it's moving to the Edgemar Center for the Arts in Santa Monica, which I also love, my friend Michelle Danner's place, who's been, Michelle's been a guest here many times. Please welcome the wonderful Barbara Tarbuck. Hello, my friend.
Oh, I'm delighted to be back with you.
You haven't been here since I saw the show, right? You
no,
came
that's
here
right. That's right.
When the show was starting to go at the Atwater.
Right, right. Oh, I'd love your review. No.
I think it's brilliant. I loved it. I didn't know that you were that eccentric. That's what I learned.
Oh, that's
you.
Interesting.
And hip.
That's interesting.
I mean, I knew that you were hip, but I didn't know that you were hip in like a like a fun, funky way. I didn't know that you would go to Burning Man.
Yes.
I won't go to Burning Man. So now I feel older than you.
Well, that's certainly not true. One of the things when we started publicizing this with Lucy Pollock, who's wonderful, has been.
I adore Lucy. Isn't she a good? She's a good person.
Oh, she really is. And she emailed me and she said, "Can we say what your real age is?" And I said, "Oh, good heavens, okay." So I really want to start there if we can.
What's your real age?
I'm 74.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I thought, well, hey, Bernie's 74.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders is. And I went,
you look way better.
Well, yeah, it's not about that, really. But thank you. No, it's about being alive and staying alive.
Yeah.
As long as you are and being open. And when people talk about, oh, they get older and they get set in their ways, if there's one thing I have learned in this world is that life is about change. And if you're not open to it and up to it,
yeah,
you are going to be left at the wayside.
I agree.
And I don't that doesn't mean being fool. I am not overtly eccentric. You're not going to look at me and think, oh, she's kooky or whatever. No, I'm not at all. I'm pretty straight. But, yeah, there's a lot going on, and there is with all of us, really.
I mean, I
we're
agree.
All much more complicated and interesting. And when people start talking about their stories, but what happened with me, with how the genesis of the show really began, oh, 5-6 years ago. My husband died, actually, 10 years ago. And the story... facts of the show are autobiographical. I have taken some liberties with it in terms of names. Really, I felt freer if I did it in a fictional form. And the protagonist is not me, Barbara. It's Christine, but it's my voice.
Right.
You know, and doing all
did
of that.
Did you make any of it up, or is it all?
Make it up in whole cloth? No. No, I did not.
Okay.
All of it
so
happened.
So it's all based on. How long was your husband sick?
7 years.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was a struggle. It was.
And was he older than you?
He was older than me, but he wasn't old when it happened. I mean, he was 62 when it happened, and I was in my 50s.
Oh,
so it was a shock.
And he had a stroke.
He had a stroke, and he had put himself through graduate school modeling for Playboy and Esquire. I mean, he was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And intelligent and had a PhD in philosophy and played, you know, basketball. I talk about that actually in the show a bit. But anyway, what goes on with
so he was in essence perfect.
He pretty much was.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly worked for me. And what made I had to come to peace with it because so many things happened during that time period, and anybody who's taken care of a person who's ill, or you know, a child, or an older person, or anybody, or sibling,
sure.
it becomes macabre and funny and tragic and serious, and you just go through a myriad of feelings and all of that. And so I started writing that down because I thought I needed to look at it because I wasn't crazy about the way I handled it.
I don't think we ever are.
You know,
I'm not crazy about the way. There, in some ways, I am crazy about how I handled my mom. In some ways, I think I could have done better, but I didn't have any idea what I was doing, and I was learning as I went.
Absolutely.
And I was trying to protect her and take care of her at the same time, and dealing with outside entities who were treating her like a child. And in some cases, I didn't like the way that they were treating her. And she was in and out of facilities, and she had home health care, all the things you probably dealt with your.
Right.
And she was my best friend.
Right.
And she was my only relative, and she was, you know, my soulmate. And I had to make sure that above all else, her integrity was taken care of. And I saw your show, you know, I don't even think she'd been dead a month when I saw your show.
Oh.
And it really rang true, because there's a lot that you go through. Sometimes they never could find out what happened to my mom, but sometimes in the summer, because of the blood thinners, I think she had a little something, a stroke or a bleed, and she was never the same. And sometimes she was mean. I mean, she was terrible sometimes. And she was sometimes mean to me. And I know she didn't mean it.
Right, right.
But she was a very smart person, and her brain was everything to her. You know, many college degrees, like your husband. And she didn't know what was going on. And sometimes she was just pissed. And sometimes she took it out on me because I was the only one there.
And also you are the closest to her.
Yeah.
On some level, she would know that. The trust.
She did.
That you were there. Because it was something... And I would try to make light sometimes with my daughter about it. I hadn't even thought about this in a long time. At one point, close to the end, he forgot who she was. And I mean, it's his only child, his only daughter.
Yeah.
And it was just momentary, but I saw this crushed look on her face, and she was still in college. She wasn't old, you know, at all. I mean, she was 21, 20. And I said, oh, darling, I wish he'd forget me. And I just said it, like, you know, because it was always, I just said it to try to lighten it. And she looked at me like the Wicked Witch of the West had just said the worst thing in the world.
Well, and you do, because you have to make light of it to survive.
Right.
And my friends got me through it. And sometimes I would say something and then just feel like the worst person in the world for saying it. But you have to deal with your own sanity, too, because you have to hold the ship up.
Right.
You're the one making everything go. And if you melt down, and I would tell my mom sometimes when she would get really unhappy, I would say, honey, I'm doing the best I can, but if something happens and I get sick or I get run down, then there's no one to take care of either of us.
Right.
So I have to kind of keep going, and I have to keep working, because I can't, you know, I'm going to outlive you, and there has to be a way to take care of me. And I'm already in my late 40s, and I can't just take 20. I thought she'd live 20 years like this. It never occurred to me she wouldn't even live a year. And I said, you know what, I can't, in 20 years from now, suddenly at 70, decide to go back to the job market. I have to keep, and I know that upset her, because I know in her heart of hearts, and I know there was part of her that knew it was wrong, she wanted me to quit my job and move in with her permanently and just be there every minute of the day, because that's what she did when I was an infant. And I get that. But it's different. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure. Yeah.
It's one thing to take care of a kid, because a kid doesn't have an option to go out and work. So it's a very difficult thing. And I think your show is so important, because it shows the humanitarian aspect of what you go through as a caregiver and what it's like to become a parent to somebody that you loved and that took care of you.
Right, right. What's so interesting about it is how so many people respond to it so many different ways, and young people respond to it. A son, very cool, you know, actor, had come up and said, "Oh, we had my father's ashes," and he started talking to me about his dad, you know, and because we don't, I don't think we tell these stories, or that we think each of us has a difficult issue to deal with.
Yeah.
By writing it out, I realized all of the characters and how some of it was wildly funny. Writing it was very difficult to do. Performing it is exhilarating. I mean, it is a journey. I mean, taking his ashes to Burning Man, which I did, was one of the best things that I could have possibly done. It just lifted my heart and my soul, and it was
awesome.
It was so visually, stunning. I did this in 2007. Now apparently it's even wilder. Not wilder.
And you make Burning Man seem like someplace somebody would want to go.
Oh, well, yeah, I think so. Yeah,
you describe it beautifully.
I want to go back.
Now, did you put his ashes in the fire?
Not in the fire. No, you couldn't do that.
Okay.
There was the Temple of Forgiveness, which is the night before the burn. The burn is about exhilaration, about lift and
okay.
loving and going on. And
so you just leave them in
together.
The Temple of Forgiveness?
But I took a satchel, and there's different sections of it that go down into a deep well of sand, and people put notes there. They do.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's very much like
a Jerusalem. And then it all just stays under the ground?
Yeah. I guess so.
Wow.
Yeah, the sand seeps it up.
That's
and
wonderful.
And it's all very green and clean, so I think I hate to think that maybe they rake it all out. I don't think so.
No, if it goes down under. Yeah. I didn't understand exactly what you did, and that's why I didn't want to ask the night of the show, like, so what happened to the ashes? But I don't know anything
well,
about Burning Man.
And
so.
I didn't take all of them. That's something else you learn if you...
Did you keep some of them?
giving them to different family members.
Sure.
And we took some down to the ocean by our house, and, you know.
Yeah, I have strict instructions not to put her in the ocean or the ground.
Oh, from her?
Oh, yeah. That was the only instruction she made. My mom was so interesting because if you look at the way she set up everything, every I and T is dotted perfectly up until my father's death.
And then she made. How long ago was that?
4 years ago. But it was set up 25 years ago. Uh-huh. My dad died 4 years ago, June 15th. But she made absolutely no arrangements for herself. So,
oh, isn't that interesting? Because, well, ours was obviously the reverse, because he was, if this happened so suddenly to him, that we had to do it all in a rush. And I just recommend everybody, please.
Get a trust.
Yeah, or and what, you know, what you want done with you, whatever.
So she said, whatever you want is what you want, I'll be gone. So I would come to her with things like, what do you think about this? And she'd be like, meh. What do you think about this? Meh. And then finally I said, you know, and my grandparents are scattered on the estate where my mom grew up, which is now, they donated it to a church in the 60s, and now it's a spiritual retreat in Poughkeepsie, outside of Poughkeepsie. I said, what if I don't, all right, you can, but I don't know. Because they were her adopted parents, and she didn't, you know. And finally I said, I have a friend who's a historian, an Irish historian. I said, what if I take you to Ireland and put you in a fairy garden? She was like, now that I like. And I'm like, all right.
Oh, I should have saved some. We could go together.
Right.
You told her I have an Irish story. I don't want to tell
take her
now,
to the, yeah, and I've never been to Ireland. We were always going to go together. And then she just got too old and refused to fly. And so that's what I'm going to do. That's the end result. But in the meantime, I'm going to put a little bit of her in Louisville, which is where she was born, in Kentucky. And I'm going to take a little bit and put her in.
You say it like somebody from Louisville.
Yeah, because she grew up there. And I'm going to put a little bit of her in. Her birth family was there. Adopted family was in Poughkeepsie. And then I'm going to put a little bit of her in my pocket and take her to a Broadway show. Maybe a revival of something she loved.
Oh, that's a
so we're going to go. We're going to go. Louisville will probably be a different trip. We're going to go New York, drive to Poughkeepsie, and then fly to Ireland.
It's so interesting too with the ashes, and they become you know, a sign of what you know, a physical manifestation of what you're feeling. Because I do feel when you lose your mother, when your mother dies, you
right?
Know, and I was in my 40s when my mother died. That's really, I think, particularly for women, but maybe for men as well. It probably is the same. This is one of the things that really is the same with us, is since we were born of them. I came out of her, and she died. So it was the first time I really, truly faced mortality for myself.
Yeah, me too.
That, you know, and I was holding her hand when she died, and went, "Oh, wow! If Mama dies, that, you know, there's no longer." Because you don't. I mean, I don't think one should be thinking about it growing up very much. It's all about life and what you're doing. However, my 5-year-old grandson's always saying, asking me if we don't see anybody for a while, have they gone up to the stars, Grandma?
Oh.
Are they up in the stars? No, they're not up in the stars. We just got to give them a call. Some of our family is, and that's, we could look up and, you know, and talk to them or breathe and think about them or whatever. But it's rather tender. But he's at 5. I don't know what the awareness of death. And it doesn't mean, I don't know what it means, but it's, they are aware, and they'll talk about, you know, a bug, do we kill it? Should we kill it? You know, and what all that means, mortality.
Yeah, it's odd. Yeah, and you do think those things, especially in your 40s when you're accepting sort of the middle of your life.
Right.
I mean, when I turned 45, 3 days after my father had brain surgery, 2 weeks later they discovered a uterine fibroid tumor the size of space. 3 weeks later, I had a hysterectomy, and 3 weeks later, he died.
Whoa.
And my mom at the time was in a wheelchair. She then got better and got into a walker and a cane. But I always said, there's nothing like one parent dying, you inheriting another parent who's infirmed, and then having a hysterectomy for God to like flick you on the forehead and say, welcome to middle age. And that was literally my 45th birthday. Wow. So it's I guess I'm officially middle-aged now. But my parents were older when I was born, so it came so much sooner. And everybody in my mom's family lived to be... I mean, my father was the middle child, but the first one to die. And my mother was the youngest, but everybody lived to be into their 90s of her birth family that we know, and into their hundreds. So for her to die at 82, it was just completely unexpected. I had absolutely no idea she would go that fast. And I really just think she wanted to. She didn't want to be that way. I think she, and I think maybe sometimes God takes you home if you ask nicely.
It could be.
You know?
Could be, yeah.
Sometimes when you're done, you're done.
Right.
For her
right.
just to stop breathing for no reason. that they could come up with, except that she just stopped breathing. I mean, it's an interesting thing. People that hang on, people that, you know, people that stay, even though there's no reason why they should still be alive. Some people go home much sooner than we think. It's so odd. It's beguiling. There's no rhyme or reason for why.
There really isn't. I mean, and some people, you know, boy, this has gotten really serious.
Yeah, well, what can I say? I'm Irish.
But it's true. But so was my husband.
But part is, was he?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, that's
that explains the handsome. But part of it was kind of laughing your way through it. And even she and I sometimes laughed, you know, when she was in the rehab in the nursing home. And, you know, when it seemed really awful, we'd start laughing about something.
Right.
But that was kind of how she raised me, just to keep laughing.
Well, I certainly want to last. I want to stay here. I would love it if I could make it through my grandson's college graduations. I have two aunts that did that, but not if I'm impaired.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as long as I'm feeling the way I do now, oh, please.
But you're
I'm excited about all of it.
Younger at 74 than my mother was. She was very young in a lot of ways. She was one of those people that when she was 60, everybody thought she was 40. But when my dad retired and my mom broke her back and she needed his help and he was already home and looking for something to do, my father was one of those people who acted 60 at 40. So she spent all that time being just the two of them.
Right.
And she got old. He put old fears in her, like everyone's going to break into the house, we're going to run out of money, the tsunami's going to come and wash over us. And she used to laugh at him for being that kind of a doomsayer. But it's almost like from him being around her all the time, she got so much older.
Well, you know, we're not provided much community or help regarding health. We have it so isolating, you know, getting sick and dying. I think it really is true in our country. My whole family is Canadian, and they've got much more help. When a baby's born, somebody comes, a visiting nurse comes from the hospital for something like 8 weeks. Almost daily to check and see, have you got the diapers? Do you know what you're doing? Are you feeling depressed? Are you okay? There's my nephew who's been been given all of this because he's Canadian and has a wonderful job in Vancouver. He calls it the nanny state. He says they do too much for you.
Yeah.
But here it's not, you know, somewhere there has to be a really healthy balance, because here you can be, I mean, until very recently, we were scared to death about, you know, if you had a pre-existing condition, and I certainly hope nobody gets rid of that. I mean, nobody tells you that you're going to lose health insurance again if you have a pre-existing condition. It's like, what? And when my husband got sick, you know, there was a lot of things about his care that would not be paid for.
And my mom too.
And I did. I mean,
and I fought it, and I bitched and complained, and did the Irish thing.
I just worked.
Stood on my
butt
soapbox.
Off. Yeah. That's when I got Walking Tall, and I started making some money.
That's like, wonderful.
I had to.
What a godsend.
You know. So yeah, but I mean, I was lucky as well. But it motivated me, I must say. But anyway, it's been. But taking a look at all of that and where I am now, because it's not just about him getting ill, and there was a lot of things in that reaction, those reactions, but it's about where am I with this, and with the younger generation and the older generation, where are we all in this world? And I feel like I've grown and learned something deeply important because of it, and I feel a freshness about life at this point. And I know, I mean, I'm on the end game. I mean, yes, you're middle-aged, but whoa, you know. I went to a birthday party for Marcia Nassiter. Marcia Nassiter is a wonderful producer. I mean, she found The Big Chill. Rocky, I mean, all kinds of things she was influential in getting. And my daughter happened to be a producer of a wonderful documentary about her that's called A Classy Broad.
Oh, that's right. I want to have them both here. I need to do that.
Yeah, you need to do that. They would be great fun. Anyway, it was her 90th birthday party, and I went, oh, wow, isn't that great? And she's so alive, and she's always looking. She says, well, you just have to get up and get out. And that's, you know, and it's...
Yeah.
It's...
But it's true.
Yes, it is. And I thought, oh, wow, and she's 90, and I went, I sat down, and I said to my daughter, good heavens, that's only 16 years from now. You know? I mean...
Yeah.
That's... So there you are. So I better... make the most of them.
I'm on the board of directors for the Artemis Women in Action Film Festival, which we just had the third week of April for the second time. And I interviewed a WASP, So she was an Air Force pilot in World War II. And back when they wouldn't let the women go into combat, so they put them on the bases and they did training. And she was a test pilot for the new planes. When they came out, she would test them and spin them around and do all things and make sure they weren't broken in any way. And all she could talk about was getting back in the air. And she's in well into her 90s. And I thought, isn't that awesome?
That's fabulous.
And I think probably you're so young because of your career. I mean, it keeps you young. You're always working with young people. You're doing exciting things.
I'm working with new plays, too. I love working on new plays.
Yeah. Keeps you fresh.
This is the first time that I've really, really put my own story out on the
But that's
line,
new.
Is,
it's another
which
new
was
thing.
Really new and but yes, it's a great profession in that regard and always. I mean, I've loved film and TV, the whole thing, the whole ride. I've never not been interested in what I'm doing.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes
I feel the same way.
Struggle, right,
sure.
Right.
Sometimes you want to rip your eyelashes
right.
out.
Right. Sometimes I don't want to go to rehearsals. Like I don't want to go to the gym, and then you go, and it's like, oh,
and then
hey.
It's amazing.
Then yeah,
yeah,
then
not the gym, but rehearsal. Always amazing. But rehearsal is always amazing. Yeah, and I think that was a place where I had a hard time with my mom when she got older because my mom worked to do things, but she never really wanted a career. She could have had one, she just didn't want one.
What year was she born?
1933.
Oh boy, she was born deeply in the Depression.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I mean,
very,
and tough, and
very
tough,
poor,
tough,
dirt poor.
Yeah, tough times. And the war, I mean, we don't give that generation sometimes the credit that they deserve for
that. Amazing. And just a survivor of everything.
Yeah, right.
But she had two master's degrees, but she educated to educate.
That's really remarkable.
But she didn't really want to work a full-time job. She just wanted to be a mom. It was really, she wanted to be in a great marriage, and she wanted 10 kids. And she was in a lousy marriage, and she had one kid who grew up and became a workaholic, and you know what I mean, and didn't turn around and have kids of my own for her to play with. So, you know, I think it was hard for me to get her motivated in older life because my idea of motivation is join something, join a theater company, join a class, do something. And I find when she lost interest in that kind of stuff was when she really got old. Right. You have to have something that gets you excited about every day.
Yes,
you have
yes.
to be excited about. I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to this stitching class, or
and
I'm going to go.
I don't know if it's excited because sometimes if people feel sad or feel down, and the whole idea of being excited is like, oh, go away. But just engaged. I took my daughter takes my grandchildren to the Self-Realization Fellowship on Sunset Boulevard.
Wonderful.
And my daughter was out of town this weekend, so I took the two of them. And I thought, okay, all right. You know, it was a little bit of that attitude. You know, to my feeling, like, you know, it's I don't know what my feeling was about it. I felt it was a little too new agey for me, which is kind of a foolish thing to say.
Oh, okay. More new agey than Burning Man?
Kind of. Well, that's a different thing. I don't know what I was thinking, but at any rate, sometimes I do. I'm sure I felt a little bit about. I always have trepidation about everything. I don't go, you know, blithely like a Pollyanna into things, but I go, you know.
Yeah.
And we got there, and it's so beautiful. It
yeah.
was so nice, and they started talking about.
It wasn't too new agey for you, after all.
No, it wasn't yesterday. I'll tell you. He's asked us, as in the congregation, to think of a small child that you know, or you love, or you take care of, or you're with. And I'm thinking, good heavens, is he doing this? He's doing this sermon strictly for me. I brought the two of them. And they were in Sunday school, and he said, and think about breathing with them, think about breathing together on this earth, and you know, in taking the breath, tensing yourself a little and releasing it. That's an acting exercise. That's what we do with the Alexander technique. That's what I did when I went to drama school in Lambda. I loved it.
Yeah.
And then he said, and then you'll feel this white light and you'll feel this gentleness. And if you share this with a child, there's a special bond that grows with you and the child. I swear to you, putting them to bed last night, I had both of them. I said, all right, we're going to breathe together. And we took, and they did, because they did it in Sunday school. They knew just what I was doing. I mean, you can learn things everywhere and grow. And they really went, they went to sleep. Usually they went 24 stories. I read two. We did this.
And they 24 went, stories.
Well, they don't get them, but they right. want, you know, they want that many.
Just 10 more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my daughter used to do that too. I probably did. I don't know. Anyway, I can't, that's hard to, yeah, probably. At any rate.
That's awesome.
So it was fun. So yes, being open, and I really did. My daughter said, "Well, how was it? What'd you think?" Because she knows I don't know what. I'll have to think about that. Maybe write about that. I'm writing something for True Story at the Ensemble Studio Theater.
It's brilliant.
The group that we belong to.
Brilliant storytelling night. Yeah. Liz Ross's night.
And yes, and she's run it beautifully. And this one we're talking about back to the drawing board.
Oh.
Whatever that means to you, back to the drawing board. And I have an idea, and I've got to go home and write it, and I haven't done this yet, is my father. My father had actually a drafting board in the basement.
Oh.
And
mine had one, too. He was a design engineer. He had one in his office.
Was it in the house, too?
It was in the house. It was in the garage originally.
Right. Oh, great.
But then when we turned our guest room into his office, when he turned our guest room into his office, then he had it there. And it's still there. That's one of the things when I clean out the house I need to think about. He was cutting that, the draftsman paper with the tiny little squares,
yes,
the lines,
yes,
constantly. He had it always with him. He did regular notes on it. He was always designing things.
Fascinating. And when you were little, he'd be working on it?
Oh, always.
Right. Oh, yeah, my father was always doing something more. And it's like when I say back to the drawing board, because I'm trying to find him now as an adult, because he died when I was 18. And I never really, as an adult, got to talk to him. That's one of the things that I think is remarkable about Anderson Cooper and his mother. What's her name? She's very famous.
Gloria Vanderbilt.
Gloria Vanderbilt.
Right.
I mean, doing the documentary together and the book, because he said he didn't want things unsaid between them. He wanted, because there was so much unsaid. His father died when he was young and his brother committed suicide. And he said, no, we gotta, you and I have to go through this together. And it was a gift. I felt it was a gift when we share that way, without the oh poor me stuff and all of that, and oh well, you the need, just hey, we're all in this together. My best friend in New York, who I'm going to go see, I'm going to do 4 Saturday evenings of my show in June.
Oh wow. In New York?
No, I'm going to do 4 Saturday evenings here.
Okay.
In June, and then starting June 4th at Edgemar, and then I am going to go to New York. One of the reasons is Brian wants me to look at a couple of places about whether or not we'll put it up there.
How exciting.
Yeah, I think so. But I'm also going to see a dear friend who's going through chemo.
Oh.
And at first I went, oh, I just felt hit by it. Well, she's responding astonishingly well to it. So there you are. You just never know what's going on in the world. And she's only 64, so you got to do it. You got to give it a shot.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, there's some people I've known friends earlier who thought they could do it all with diet or something.
Well, I think that helps. My mom had
of course it helps.
Baby breast cancer. She had one cancer cell. Actually, they didn't even find it till they did the surgery on the lump and then sent the pathology to Sacramento. So they even told her she didn't have it twice, and then it turned out in the end they found one cell. So they went and did a bigger lumpectomy. And the doctor told her, this is the kind that comes back, so be prepared. So she had to go have the test every 6 months. It never came back. I think a lot of it sometimes is your attitude. You know, how you handle...
Well,
not in all cases, but I think in some cases, how you handle it, how you deal with
it. Oh, it's important.
How much you want to live.
But the also, kind of, and converse, the opposite side is stress can greatly debilitate you. I got breast cancer when and I've actually just been declared April 1st cancer free for the 5-year mark.
Since she went through the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Was the doctor asked me, my surgeon asked me, has there been in the last much stress? This is 5 years ago, 2010. Has there been much stress in your life the last 5 to 7 years? And I went, whoa, I was taking care of my husband. She said,
Yeah.
You know, like, because you hold things in, you know, when and that's, it couldn't have caused it, but it certainly provided some sort of host. And then what's wonderful, I think, about healthcare in this city, and particularly healthcare when you belong to acting unions and have this wonderful healthcare insurance, really, is they gave me acupuncture. They gave me a nutritionist. They gave me all of this was part of it, and the surgery, because I did have it, and I mean I had the lump and I had it in the lymph nodes, so it was not a joke, you know, It was not something to play with. I didn't feel, but I really have responded. And I would go. I'd go to radiation for 7 weeks every morning, and it's quick, but it can really knock you out. So I would just drag myself to the gym. That's what I was talking about. And because they said if you can get it through your body, if you can get your body to just make it run through your bloodstream, it'll get out of you quicker. So I went, okay.
Yeah, and they say oxygen, breathing.
Right.
Do you sleep? Do you breathe well?
Yeah.
Are you, and all the things that are bad for you.
It's like that exercise yesterday, breathe in, let it out.
Are you doing things that are good for your immune system?
Yeah.
Because, you know, not drugs and alcohol and chemicals and sugar and all those things that are terrible
for
your
immune system. I do like to have my Chardonnay, I do.
Well, but that's okay. Yeah, but a Chardonnay is one thing, but, you know, if you're, you know, people that are doing a lot of everything, it's weakening your immune system.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're talking about life in college.
Right, but in college you have the advantage of being young.
Right, but you
so
know
your
what?
Immune system
but
is
you
a
know
young
your
person.
Your heart is not fully formed when you're in college.
No,
when you're
that I didn't
age,
know
it's
that.
Not until you're 25. What have we been doing? And up all nights. They're now deciding that teenagers need more sleep than they ever knew for their serotonin or whatever, all these things that you have to do. So that they're starting, Santa Monica High School is starting, I believe they've already changed it to 9 a.m.
Instead
of making it 7:30, 4:00 to 8:00, because the kids can't concentrate.
Yeah.
They can't. It's interesting. I think it's really true.
Yeah, I was in an automobile accident when I was 23. And it gave me a little bit of a head injury. So in order to have a brain
that's... Did you have a concussion?
I had a closed head concussion. Yeah, inside. How they described it to me was because it was a full-on front impact, that your white matter and your brain matter, your gray matter sit on top of each other, but one is heavier than the other. So when you hit a wall, which I did, you fly forward, and whichever one is heavier moves faster, and it tears the transmitters in between.
Ooh.
So it gave me like a whopping case of ADD that I never had before. And I used to be one of those kids that could just focus on something for hours. So if I don't sleep, then my brain doesn't work. So in order for me to come here and do this every day...
You had to learn to accommodate
that. I had to learn to sleep. So when I always get 8 hours. If I have a day where I don't have to work till later, I have a day off, I allow myself to sleep a couple more. Because I figure it's like, it's everything else, right? It's like eating a salad. Letting yourself go back to sleep and sleep an extra couple hours it's fuel for your brain.
Right.
So I have to sleep well. And luckily I don't have sleeping problems. Like an automotive artist can't sleep and I can. Because of this thing, when my brain starts to get tired, I just go boop. Even sometimes I'll be sitting up and I'm like, and I'm done. And I'll fall asleep at the computer because my brain's done. So it's enabled me to sleep and I'm so thankful for that. Because I'm not always running on 2, 3, 4 hours sleep because I wouldn't be able to concentrate. I'd start saying the wrong words and, you know.
Right. People vary about sleep. I always liked 7 or 8 hours of sleep, somewhere in between that. Right, you know.
Sometimes I'll get 7. But I try to always get 8.
When I was young, I mean, I would come, you know, work very, very hard on plays and in school and in college and all that. And then I could sleep in the weekends 10, 11 hours. You know,
yeah.
Like, And I can't do that anymore.
Even if I get
I
up...
I wish I could.
And I can't sleep more than 6 hours, sometimes I'll get up and I'll work for a couple hours, just work and answer things on Facebook and do answer email till I get sleepy again and put myself back to sleep.
But the thing is, but it always says what time it is when you send something. I don't want to send something at 3 a.m.
Oh, I don't mind. People know I'm crazy and I'm up all hours of the night anyhow. It just depends on when my brain gives out.
No, that's when I this perception that I had, that I want everyone to have, that, you know, that I really am playing this, I don't know.
Hey, you're steady. Very physically, you were jumping up and down on a bench, and I'm like, I couldn't do that.
No, yeah, I am.
You're very agile.
Yeah,
I mean, you're in really good shape.
Oh, thank you.
To be able to jump up and down like that, that's craziness.
I hope it never goes away. Actually, well, whatever.
I don't see it going away. Yeah. You probably noticed the difference because you've been in your body this whole time.
No, physically, I'm pretty good. Yeah.
But
I don't have any, you know, physical pain and stuff. But the elevator was out in this building. And I had to walk up to the fourth floor, and I'd just come from the gym, and I went, oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry.
You know, sorry, I should have just used the stairs and gone up and down a few times. But anyway, so when I got to the third floor, I just went, ooh, wait a minute. Okay. And I went, oh, no, I never had to do that before.
But it's okay to do that.
It's okay.
I do that every day. I drag my fat butt up those stairs every day. But unfortunately, it's only my legs that look great. I wish I could walk up the stairs with my chin and my neck. I'd have like the most worked out neck, and I wouldn't have seven necks. And then I would take my stomach and learn to walk up with that, but it doesn't work that way.
It's like you should draw that cartoon. That's funny.
But I take stairs everywhere.
Yeah, it's a good
and
idea.
It really, the difference in my legs is amazing.
Yeah.
So it's to counterbalance. Now I just look like a potato on toothpicks. I heard that the Irish body described as that once, that you either have that gene where you're super skinny or you have the potato on toothpicks body. And I'm like,
oh no,
I have potato on toothpicks. All right. You're wonderful. And I can't believe I completely forgot to end the show and we're over. Where can people find you online? They find out about the show.
Oh, it's at edgemarcenter.org. EDGEMARCENTER.org. And it should have all the information. It's just four Saturday evenings at 8 o'clock. I would just love it if people come. It's fun. It's not good. You'll be surprised.
Do it, people. And if you missed the links, SheenaMetalExperience.com, LATalkRadio.com. Send me an email and I'll gladly forward the links over to you. You're going to come back right before you open? I'd love it, Barbara.
I would love it too.
All right, we're going to do it. We're going to bring people, the director and maybe the producer.
Yes.
It's going to be so much fun.
Yes.
It's the Sheena Metal Experience at LA Talk Radio. You know what we do here, people. Every Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific time, we rip the veil off the human side, Joe, and expose those big old Homo sapiens at their most bizarre and every day and always at their most beautiful. And you know it's my show, and that's true, but what it really is, my friends, it's your experience. Thanks for listening. Have a great night. I'll see you all tomorrow right here on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.